Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for September 19th, 2009. I'm Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic today is the dynamics of the mass strike. Now, what prompts our discussion, and we have two guests with us today, is what you have been seeing unfolding in the United States over the summer recess in August of Congress, when you had dozens of thousands of people daily showing up at what in the past had been town hall meetings where just simply dozens of people came, or less than a dozen. September 12th, that was just 1 week ago, you saw the protest rally in Washington, D.C., which had dozens of, it actually had hundreds of thousands of people, at least 300,000 probably or more. So you're talking about people on the streets out against the policies out of the White House and Congress, in the strength of about 1 million people at least in recent weeks in the United States. Now, this is not the culmination of something. Think of it as a milestone in progress, and therefore it's a critical moment right now for turning the course away from doom of the United States and the world into the emergency policy measures that Lyndon LaRouche and the LaRouche Political Action Committee and collaborators around the world have been working for. So I'm glad to have here to discuss with us in the studio live with me is Nancy Spanas. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks, Marsh.
Who is the editor-in-chief of Executive Intelligence Review. We have some news about Lyndon LaRouche's publications in just a second. But off-site and nearby is, here in Virginia, is Matthew Ogden from the LaRouche Political Action Committee and LaRouche Youth Movement. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
So what I'd like to do, Nancy, why don't you well, now I let the cat out of the bag. Let me just say, LaRouche's new book-length paper, just tell us what's been posted on the relevant site, Executive Intelligence Review. That's the LaRouche, the one that people are listening to the LaRouche show on, LaRouchePub.com. Tell us about this paper.
Well, this is the third in the trilogy that Mr. LaRouche began in the early summer, where he was oriented to taking to the next step, the education of not only his associates, but a grouping of economists around the Obama administration who have shown a sensitivity and a beginning understanding of LaRouche's economic method, particularly as expressed in the triple curve function, which Mr. LaRouche first introduced in 1996, which in itself is a heuristic device to educate people around what the dynamics of an economy actually are. And so this is the third in the trilogy. It's a 128-page article, which takes up the entire EIR dated September 18th, and we are very fortunate that we got a contribution. We were able to print this EIR, which means primarily that we're going to be able to get it into those circles of economists and advisors, the sort of economic team in the wings, so to speak, I would say, to replace Larry Summers, Orzag, and all those creeps, and also into political layers in influential layers in New York, around the United Nations, diplomatic circles, and so forth. 2,000 copies is not a huge amount. It's not mass. But we are aiming for intersecting the potential leadership of a changed United States as a result of the upheaval which is currently going on in rejecting the Obama administration's fascist policies.
Thanks. And I'm sure people are glad to hear that there was a contribution that enables this print run of 2,000 that will be got to where it's going to do the most good. But certainly more is needed, especially now when it speaks for itself. And let me just throw in, it is the case, Nancy, that the LaRouche Political Action Committee is getting out a print run of Lyndon LaRouche's last webcast. That was September 8th?
Yes. That should be coming out in 200,000 copies this week. It's a lot shorter. It's 40 pages.
And the title of that is Down with the British Empire, a good way to start this program about the upwelling in the United States. But again, that the LaRouche Political Action Committee can definitely make good use of contributions to print more, get it out, and do all the rest. So, Nancy, if you would begin with anything on the scope of the uprising against the wrongful government policies, but you have written an article beginning with likening this to what happened 20 years ago in East Germany.
Right. It does happen to be approximately 20 years after the uprising, the mass strike uprising in East Germany against the communist regime there. This was in our lifetime, and in fact in the last number of decades, the most clear example of a mass strike process, a process which is unique to a period of crisis in history where a people as almost an organic force comes to a sense of itself as a respectable citizenry, as a citizenry to be respected, and asserts itself against discredited government institutions. Now, Mr. LaRouche on last Monday, September 14th, actually said, well, in reiterating that this current process in the United States most closely parallels 1989 Germany, said we should issue a warning to President Obama, watch out what happened to the head of the East German state, who was Erich Honecker, because the process which takes over a population in a mass strike is extremely rapid sometimes.
Oh, good. Tell that story about what Mr.
Right.
Honecker was saying.
Right. It just so happened that the uprising in East Germany began in September of 1989. The first demonstrations were Monday demonstrations in the town of Leipzig, where people gathered from all over. They began in perhaps, you know, a few people outside a church. They grew to 20,000 by the end of September, and then rapidly from then on, by October, it was into 250,000 people, a massive number of people in the streets every Monday night, and culminated in November 9th of that year, when people may remember, those who were born by that time, the wall came down, right? The Berlin Wall came down. But in fact, the government of East Germany tried to ignore what was going on. They just said, well, you know, okay, people are out there. We can threaten them with our police power. You know, nothing's really going to hurt us. Okay, so the demonstrations are doubling every week. I mean, but we're not going to, we have our policies. And in fact, on October 6th, Honecker had a grand celebration of the 40th anniversary of the establishment of East Germany. That's at the point when the Soviet split the country. And he was there on the podium and saying, we're having tremendous progress, and, you know, the wall will stay up for 100 years, and, you know, nothing will shake us in our progress towards socialism, blah, blah, blah. And he was gone. In a matter of weeks, he personally, and in a matter of 6 weeks, the entire regime was shaken to its very foundation with the fall of the wall. It took a little longer for it to actually be wiped off the political map, but it was within a year. So there was a dynamic at work that his political class and those he was responsible to attempted to ignore, and it was at their very own peril. And what LaRouche was saying is attempts by Obama and those who control him, particularly from the whole British crowd who have used him as a puppet from the very beginning, are really courting trouble. And Obama himself is courting personal as well as national disaster to ignore the fact that this mass strike process is in motion and can very rapidly overwhelm the entire regime as it and will, even if it takes a longer period of time than 6 weeks. This is a process that's been unleashed that's not going to be suppressed in any kind of short-term period.
And let me just, would you comment on just one thing? Because the, by the way, people should look on the LaRouche Political Action Committee site. That's LaRouchePAC.com. And they'll see a video, We Are the People, The Lost Chance of 1989. That leads us into something else. They'll see the dynamics of the mass strike. But it's not a matter of issues. The apparent issue then, you could say, was that you couldn't travel out of East Germany. That was proscribed. But of course, and today there is health care, but that's not the defining, it's not a question of single issues.
Right. No, not at all. In East Germany, it was actually incredible because you there had a population that had been under dictatorship, first of the fascist sort and then of the communist sort, for more than 60 years. In the United States today, you, in a sense, you have a similar process. We've had a process since FDR's death of an increased violation of the Constitution of the United States in terms of its commitment to the general welfare. This violation got a lot worse after the assassination of Kennedy and got a lot worse with the introduction of George W. Bush and September 11th. And people have been seething underneath, you know. They have, and now with the fact that the financial system has come to an end point, it's come to the point where we cannot sustain all the people in the world who have already been born, much less the future generations, come to a point where the financial system itself is so bankrupt that it's not going to be able to be held together, then under these circumstances, people have snapped and they've lost their faith in the government. The final straw was the Obama administration's presentation of a health care bill, which explicitly intends to kill, you know, oodles of people because supposedly we can't afford it at the same time that we're giving trillions of dollars to bailouts to banks. This has, you know, just moved into a new phase of people saying, we are not going to take it anymore. We are the people from the United States. Take it from the preamble. We the people of the United States. It's our right to live and have a future, and we're not going to listen to a Congress and a president who try to talk us in to accepting a new scheme that is destroying our future.
Yes, I'll throw in, I think what most everyone knows who's not been up to the Arctic for 6 weeks, when you'd see television, there was Senator Specter in Philadelphia saying, well, I don't have to be here. And everyone shouted, yes, you do. There was McCaskill saying, don't you trust me? No, we don't. Right. Now,
maybe Matt has something more he wants to add at this point.
Right.
Yeah, sure. I think that in discussing both 1989 and what's happening today, we have the opportunity to use moments like this as anomalies to be able to then look at what's the real physics, if you will, behind human culture as a general phenomenon. And I think that if you look at this, the phenomenon of seeing people in the streets tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the streets is really just the secondary effect of a deeper, more primary psychological cause which had occurred, which brought people there in the minds of a population at a moment in which you have the psychological bonds which had connected a people to their government begin to be broken. And that's when you get the uprising of the mass strike. That's when you get this surprising historical phenomenon which people call awaking the sleeping giant or something like this. There's something in people's bones, almost as an irresistible force, which whispers to them all at once and brings people together as one organic movement fighting to defend something which they value deeply inside themselves, a sense of humanity that, despite how much has been done to that people, they still have a grip on the thread of this, which has been in their culture for many generations.
Yeah, Matt, let me ask you further on that, because you're involved in making the LaRouche, or the LPAC videos. You've been talking to Mr. LaRouche and colleagues, and if you make it explicit, you're talking about in 1989, there had been the long wave of the classical tradition in people, in Germans, certainly in East German as well as West German, and that's a factor. What you're talking about here in the United States, Nancy just spoke of people having been felt violated in recent decades because they have a sense of the rightness of what it ought to be in the Republic, at least going back to FDR and also our tradition going back to the Revolution. Could you speak about this, cultural context?
I think it's really crucial because thinking back on the events that you just mentioned with Arlen Specter and with McCaskill and so forth and what people have now become familiar with on television, what's really striking is if you go back to August 1st, the day that LaRouche made his midsummer webcast, before any of these events even began to happen, the very first thing that Mr. LaRouche said in that webcast was almost verbatim what ended up happening only a few days later. Congress will go back to their districts, they'll meet lynch mobs there, and we're going to see an uprising among the American population like we haven't seen in generations. And so there's something about the dynamics of human culture, which Mr. LaRouche understands, which allowed him to make that sort of social forecast. I was also looking back at some of the things that he said at the end of 2007, for example. He put out a document called The Pearl Harbor Effect, where he describes in a beautifully poetic language that he describes there's something like a whiff of Pearl Harbor in the air. There's a stirring in the population. There's an imminent awakening, which we will experience. This is 7 or 8 months before the events of this summer. And if you go all the way back to 2006, where Mr. LaRouche first put out his call for the HBPA and the kinds of emergency stopgap economic measures that must be taken. Then,
2007, but your point's well taken.
In
go
2007,
ahead. Yeah, right.
He said, look, if we don't put something like this in place, we're going to face mass social chaos. We're going to face a social upheaval that people don't expect. So I'd like to go back to what you and Nancy had said. This is not just about a single issue. This is not just about health care now, and it wasn't about the single issue in 1989 of travel to the West. But there's something very deeply embedded in 250 years or more of American culture and a similar amount of time in German culture, which caused people to feel something culturally speaking to them and moving them. Something which was bigger than them as individuals.
Right. Let me. There's a counterpoint here. If one of you would just make this point, that because as the LPAC TV, the video said, we are the people. The lost chance of 89. Once you had this potential, this upwelling, and everything that the cultural process Matt describes, then you had this the British intense intervention against all this to prevent Germany from being what it could with Russia and development and so forth. Do you want to say something, Nancy?
Well, the fact is that this has also been a very much of our concern and orientation since the everything broke out in July, early August, which is what is the leadership on the scene to move this process in a productive direction. As Mr. LaRouche's first, one of his first analyses when we realized that it had begun to bring out tens of thousands of people to go after their congressmen in this way. And really, this is very... people have not seen at all the way we at LaRouche PAC have what's actually going on a national scale. It's been suppressed in the press, particularly over the past 3 to 4 weeks. The first couple weeks it was a novelty. But, you know, these are people coming out who have never been involved in politics before, who are just frightened, who don't know why they're there in a certain sense. We once had a contact come across 500 people gathered in Bismarck, North Dakota. He couldn't believe it. He said, you know, there have never been 500 people coming out in Bismarck, North Dakota before. And he said a lot of them didn't know why they were there. But they heard something was happening that was relevant to the direction of their lives. So the question, what Mr. LaRouche said initially was, this could be a French revolutionary situation. In other words, something totally out of control into the streets, which can be manipulated to lead to disaster, to be taken over by British agents, as the British did with the French Revolution, in order to ultimately install Napoleon and then use him to effectively reconquer Western Europe for the benefit of the British Empire explicitly. Well, the question in the United States was, will this process be able to be manipulated by British agents, or is it going to be a French revolutionary process or an American revolutionary process? Now, it's implicitly an American revolutionary process because people are, as Matt said, responding to with their cultural depth to their understanding of the constitutional rights of American citizens over the past 250 years. But without the appropriate leadership to move this from any kind of negative protest to a situation where people are demanding the kinds of change in economic policy that Mr. LaRouche has put forward, you could have a manipulated situation. Now, we have found, because of the work that Mr. LaRouche and the LPAC and particularly the youth have done in terms of saturating the country since 2004, Mr. LaRouche's April 11th webcast warning that Obama was moving in this direction, and some rather unique political input, such as the putting of a little toothbrush mustache on the president's picture, can say clearly that the LaRouche leadership has been taken up by a large percentage of the people in motion. They are orienting to the website. They're orienting to LaRouche PAC members who are present with their literature. And while they are not citing chapter and verse of bankruptcy reorganization and what Mr. LaRouche says they have to do, they are totally open to that because LaRouche and LaRouche movement is the only honest leadership that has come forward to bring this into motion. And they're recognized as such by people who may disagree on most of the particulars of a political program they nonetheless or are tempted to disagree because of other ideological influences on them over the year, they have tremendous respect that LaRouche is leading the movement to tell the truth about what the president is doing and therefore has to be respected to tell the truth about what we're going to do to get out of this disaster as a country and a world.
Do you want to add anything to that, Matt?
Well, I mean, I just got a report the other day that despite the fact that the campuses were out of session during the course of the summer when most of these town hall meetings were happening, the wave of the mass strike has spilled over onto campuses also. Up in Detroit, one of the places which has been hardest hit by the economic crash, and we saw some of the biggest turnouts at the town hall meetings. Some of the LaRouche PAC organizers went to a campus there to do some organizing on the day that the campus opened for classes, and all of a sudden they found their table surrounded by maybe close to 100 people, 100
wow.
students, arguing with each other and fighting over the ideas that were being presented by the organizers at the literature table. It started by having a small group come up and start attacking our organizers for having the poster with Obama and the mustache, and then it seemed like a mass of students came up and started defending us against those that small minority who were attacking our polemic. So we're just beginning to see something which is going to develop even as you get more and more concentration on the campuses and so forth.
Right. And Nancy, do you think there's anything to be said about the manifestation of the intensification politically when Congress did resume? Well, I'm not looking to them suddenly the Damascus Road conversion. I'd take it, but I don't see it. But on the other hand, Baucus introduced this Obamacare Nazi medicine bill, and you are getting, instead of going along to getting along, you have some differentiation that having had their feet burned, some of the Congress are indicating?
Look, we know from the inside, because we have been talking with aides to congressmen, even in Capitol Hill, even when they were out in the field being either having meetings or running from having meetings, that Congress has been totally shaken up by this process. No one has seen anything like this in their political lifetime, in effect. The person who's been most loud about it recently has been House Minority Leader Boehner.
Senator Shelby, I think, said the same thing. He never had so many. Yeah.
Right. Boehner said, you know, I've never seen anything like it. These people are scared to death. They're scared that the country they grew up in is not going to be the country their children and grandchildren grow up in. There's a sense these guys are not, they've been shocked into not sloganeering, so to speak. I mean, there was one example of a congressman down in Mississippi who happens to be somebody who is in the Blue Dog camp and doesn't go along with the health care bill. But he had 1,300 people at his town meeting, and he couldn't believe it because they usually would have tens. Under Katrina, this was in a Katrina region, they had 400. When people were desperate to go see their congressman to try to get money to create a condition in which they could live, they had, you know, many times more that people. So they went over the whole list of everybody who signed in. They said these people must have been bussed in from the outside. You know, it must have been a political operation. Not at all. These right-wing jerks like Dick Armey don't control anything. They couldn't organize their way out of a paper bag. They're just trying to take credit for it. And they determined that all 1,300 of these people were from the district, with a handful of exceptions. People are ready to come to their feet to say, we are the people and you're going to act in our interests. We're not going to take anything else. We don't want to hear from you. We want to tell you what we need you to address at this point.
Well, let me ask Matt to draw this out a little more, because I understood you and Nancy and others had a chance to confer with Mr. LaRouche today as things are unfolding about, and he was, I understand he was making a point, this gets to the President Obama himself, that under these circumstances you're just describing, the role of LPAC is to tell the president what his options are. No negotiations or anything.
Right.
Do you want to...
Well, I think what we saw in 1989, something that was, it was unstoppable. There was no way that you were going to suppress what happened. And that changed the entire political climate of the entire world, because everybody who wanted to retain any sort of political leadership position had to adapt themselves to what was happening among the people there. And so that's what Nancy was just pointing out is beginning to happen with the Congress. Anybody who wants to put themselves in any position of political power is going to have to figure out how to adapt to this social force. But what Mr. LaRouche was saying today, and what he's been making the point of lately, President Obama was put in there to ram through a fascist program. Healthcare reform, so-called, was just one of the things. There was also cap and trade, and there's also, of course, the continuing bailouts. But the people who put him there from the City of London they miscalculated and did not account for the fact that we were going to put out this poster with Obama wearing his mustache, and we were going to interrupt that whole process. So the entire thing has fallen apart, and Obama's program is a failure. You see what is happening with his Baucus bill and so forth. So Mr. LaRouche is saying, look, now we have to say we've destroyed Obama's program, what he was pre-programmed to do. He is the president of the United States, and what we now need is to clear out the nest of behaviorist advisors. We need to clear out Larry Summers. We need to clean house and bring in this group, which you could call the presidency in the wings, a group of economists and policymakers who are who take seriously the challenge of confronting the world's greatest economic breakdown crisis that we've seen in modern history, and surround Obama with these competent advisors, protect him from his enemies now in the British Empire, who are going to think that he's expendable and will try to get rid of him, and make him do what we and the people of the United States want him to do.
Right, so we have quite a role cut out for ourselves.
Yeah, and it's a question of the quality of ideas that can, under a unique set of social circumstances such as now, dominate. I mean, in fact, we in the Mr. LaRouche's political philosophical association since the late 1960s have been oriented exactly in this direction. At what point will we have, will people become receptive to the solutions to the obvious economic disaster which is facing them? It was even obvious then to Mr. LaRouche. It was obvious before 1968, but it was particularly obvious at that point of period of social crisis, where you did have also mass action in the streets, but it was a different kind of mass action. It was a factionalized, you know, left-wing, right-wing kind of setup against the unity of the nation and to destroy the nation. In fact, that's what the Vietnam War, which was pushed through on British impulse, was actually all about, was destruction of the United States, which included actually creating an accentuated left-right split. The left-right operation in the United States was meaningless. I mean, that's a European construct. It's a French Revolutionary construct. But it was brought here. Mr. LaRouche, at that point, early on, when we, at the Columbia strike, which was the action which actually generated the first
1968,
the first action which actually precipitated an independent political organization led by Mr. LaRouche,
Columbia University,
the Labor
New York
Committee.
City, yeah.
Mr. LaRouche was educating us on the mass strike dynamics. Those were not realized at that time, though there was an approximation in the sense that you had people from different social sections of the population, people from the ghettos of New York City, students from the campuses, were working, some working people who were being attacked by the administration, the city administration with austerity plans. These people were all in motion at the same time against what the government was doing to them. And we as a political force were putting forward the programmatic solution to their problem, particularly around an economic policy that would bring economic growth again. But this, it didn't go very far in actuality in terms of the total masses of people, in terms of the dynamic that would bring these people together in common interest program for the understanding that their interests were the same as those of these other sectors that were in political motion. At this point, the threat to the survival of every section of the legitimate section, forget the Wall Street, of the U.S. population from the economic disaster which has been brought on us by the globalization and the British Empire is such that combined with the intuitive attachment to the rights of the U.S. Constitutional Republic, we have the ability to have a unified mass strike process where people are looking to, they're prepared to collaborate with sections of the population which they never thought of before. We picked this up in the organizing. Matt may have more examples, but I know from the march last Saturday, where my husband was there and organizing, he said that the thing that was the most dramatic was that this left-right idea or liberal-conservative idea would go out the window almost as soon as you opened your mouth about what the real problems of the economy actually are. People were very willing to look at the fact that this is an American-British problem. It's a republic versus oligarchy situation that we're facing, not some kind of contrived operation between the left and the right.
Well, that brings us, let me bring one thing in here about, speaking of the context in which this is taking place, of the mass unemployment, underemployment, everything connected with that. You've got 14 states have official unemployment over 10%, Michigan over 15%, places 20, 25, 30, 40%, towns all over the country. So we know this is worsening by the day. So on the economic, on people putting it together to understand the in this context of what a republic, what would be the American system of economy directionality versus the collapse or the monetarist globalist side. Matt, would you say something about the purpose and also the content of what you're involved in? You made a LPAC TV special called Rosa Luxemburg and LaRouche's Triple Curve, bringing out the idea of understanding, getting to understand how these British imperial economy systems dysfunction. You took the example of Egypt that Rosa Luxemburg went through from something like 1850 to the 1890s.
Right. Well, in that video in particular, what Mr. LaRouche has emphasized for a long time is that we have to understand what's occurring right now in terms of what you brought up, the unemployment and the general social collapse of the physical economy in the United States, as not being anything close to being a mere recession or depression, panic, whatever it was called in normal terms that we know from the past 200 years. But what we're facing right now is the collapse of a 3,000-year-old system, a system of monetarism, a system of imperialism, which is the same thing. And we have to look at our job in those terms. We have to look at our job in terms of not just overthrowing the Obama presidency or overthrowing the behaviorists or something like that, overthrowing even the House of Windsor, but we have to look at our job as overthrowing a 3,000-year-old system of empire. And the reason why Rosa Luxemburg is such an important personality to bring into that discussion is because she uniquely understood this, the system of empire, as being something which is based on, in her terms, she said, based on the instrument of international loans and usurious relations between a small oligarchical, a banking oligarchy, and nation states, which become debt slaves and therefore destroyed by that small oligarchical class. Now, it's actually interesting because Rosa Luxemburg's understanding of the true nature of empire, not being something which is just seated in a nation, it's not the natural outgrowth of nationalism in the kinds of simplistic ways that people think about empire now. Her understanding of imperialism put her in a position to also understand the forces of human culture and the kind of strategy that a revolutionary political movement would have to take to overthrow that system of empire. So in another video that's also posted on the LaRouche PAC site called The Dynamics of Mass Strike, Rosa Luxemburg's work on the mass strike itself plays a very large part. Actually, there's two personalities to take into account there. There's Rosa Luxemburg, who, if people don't know, was a Polish economist and a German revolutionary at the turn of the century. And then there's the poet, Percy Bysshe Shelley, who was an English poet in the 1800s. Take those two personalities into account, and we begin to understand what Mr. LaRouche has been getting at, even in this recent paper which he has released, which is in EIR this week, in terms of the real nature of human culture and how history works. I just wanted to point out something that Nancy said before, reminded me. In 1968, when these actions were happening at Columbia University, Mr. LaRouche published a short memo called The Mass Strike, and he features both of these personalities, both Rosa Luxemburg and Percy Shelley, in that paper all the way back then, 41 years ago.
Right, long time. Do you have the quote from Shelley in front of you, Matt?
Yeah, I think, well, the one thing that LaRouche points out in this memo that I just brought up, what's very interesting, he says it in a way that Shelley also says it, but he says, look, you have to understand, at the time that the mass strike process sets in, all of the previously established laws of what you would call normal human behavior seem to be superseded by a whole new special set of laws, which are peculiar laws in terms of social dynamic laws, which are peculiar to that kind of period of mass strike. And everybody who thinks that you can go on operating in the political wheeling and dealing kind of manner that you did before the mass strike sets in find themselves completely bewildered and mystified in terms of what happens. So he points to what Rosa Luxemburg observed as the uncontrollable, almost spontaneous movement of a people acting as if one organism, something that can't be just dictated, something that can't be commanded, something that can't be reduced to a sociological explanation or some sort of mathematical formulation, but something which takes on an internally driven, self-developing life of its own. But the crucial point then, after looking at what Rosa Luxemburg observes as the empirical behavior of a population during a period of mass strike, is what I mentioned before, what you could call the physics of human culture. And the place to find a discussion of what the true physics, the dynamics of human culture are in both the poetry and the prose of Percy Shelley. So what you mentioned, the most popular place, the most well-known place where Shelley brings this question up is in the last two paragraphs of his essay called In Defense of Poetry, where he talks about a people who find themselves moved by something which they might not have even recognized the day before, a people who the day before would never have imagined themselves stepping onto the stage of world history, the next day finding themselves being the vessels of ideas which they might not have even found in themselves previously. So he says that these people are perhaps themselves the most sincerely astonished at the manifestation of this power through their own soul, because it is less their spirit than the spirit of the age, he calls it. But now, I would encourage people who are listening to this discussion, don't just read The Defense of Poetry. Don't just settle for that short description. If you read all the rest of Percy Shelley's poetry and his prose, you'll find descriptions of this, because this is something that Shelley himself was involved in directly, living in the aftermath of the American Revolution, seeing the failure of the French Revolution, but also seeing the spirit of revolution sweeping across the Atlantic back into Europe and inspiring peoples there. He found himself both playing the role of understanding what the dynamics of this spirit of revolution were, and also attempting to step into the shoes of being an organizer in the tradition of Benjamin Franklin, being the conductor of this great social uprising, in order to try to continue the mission of the American Revolution all around the world.
The quote prior, in the recent time, Mr. LaRouche has been emphasizing this spirit of the age which takes over people in a period of mass strike when they, to their own surprise, as you just referenced. But there's a corollary aspect of this, which is what I was trying to get at before, which is also that in such a period, people are much more receptive to profound ideas about man and nature in being communicated to them. This is an extraordinary, since the axioms by which they were operating day to day, what will get you ahead, how can I survive, all this is not working. It's not working. Your congressman doesn't represent you anymore. You can't get your health care. You can't get your job. You can't get clean water. You could get the flu. You don't have a hospital to go to. All the things that you were told would work if you just followed certain prescriptions of behavior are not working. The way Mr. LaRouche used to describe it a long time ago is you turn on the light switch and water comes out, right? It's all bollocksed up. Now, as people who have studied economy and science with Mr. LaRouche and culture over as long as we've been working with him, for me a bit more years than you, but this is lawful because we have been violating the laws of the universe in the way we've run our economy. We've gone to a post-industrial society. We stopped after the middle of the 1960s investing in the advanced science and technology, especially around the space program that was required, and so forth and so on. We, you know, gave up virtually every advance that was put into effect by Franklin Delano Roosevelt by the time of George Bush leaving office. So it's lawful, but for the ordinary mass of population, it's a shock that the rules of the game don't function anymore, and therefore they are open to the not simple slogans, which is, you know, the way that an idiot would deal
you mean
with
like
this
level
question.
Playing field and all
like
those
you
slogans.
Know let's have competition, like
graduate and you'll get a job,
like freedom, you know, freedom from government, lower your taxes. They are available, they are open to the profound ideas which actually were the foundation of this country. I mean, the other most famous mass strike process that we can point to in history is the period of the American Revolution itself, which, of course, was a protracted process of decades. And Rosa Luxemburg makes this point in her empirical studies also when she's dealing with the Russian Revolution. She said this really lasted from at least 1890 to 1917, right? It's an up and down process. You aren't necessarily going to see linear growth in terms of the numbers of people coming out, but it may appear to die down and not come up again until some, you know, unpredictable event touches people off again to say this is just too much. And what is most critical in such a period of time is that the most true and profound ideas about how we need to reorganize our society and our culture come to the fore and are put forward. And that's what we in the LaRouche movement are absolutely committed to do, and why the video product in particular on the LaRouche PAC site is crucial in feeding an educational process, which is at the heart of the ability for the mass strike process to succeed.
Well, let me ask, I think each one of you had referred to, speaking of profound ideas, for the way people would quickly get the British, you know, in other words, oligarch or empire versus the American system. In other words, begin to know thy enemy, know who to blame, because other emblematic images we've had are Prince Charles or the Queen and this kind of thing, as we saw there with Michelle and Barack Obama literally visiting them in the spring. But on this matter, I understand you're working on more LPAC video and so forth, Matt, and right. You're going to concern yourself with these British networks that jumped on the 1989 potential.
Right. There's a few things that are coming out now. One that's just more immediate. People might have seen on the LaRouche PAC site just over the past few days an expose that was put out by Tony Chaikin, which is an important expose in terms of the source of this euthanasia policy that Barack Obama is pushing now in the British Empire, a man named Simon Stevens, and what occurred under the Tony Blair regime, setting up the NICE program and so forth, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence. So that's an important thing. We're going to have a new video statement out on that pretty soon too, just tracing the heritage of this British euthanasia, British genocide policy back from today all the way to predating Hitler. So people should watch out for that. The other thing that we are putting out, and this is relevant to the 20th anniversary of the 1989 Monday demonstrations in East Germany, and also relevant to an event which is coming up this week, I think Tuesday, I believe, where Helga Zepp-LaRouche, Mr. LaRouche's wife, and also candidate for chancellor in Germany, she's going to be delivering a webcast, which I think will be translated simultaneously into English.
Let me throw that in for people.
Sure.
Hold that thought, as I say. I'd like everyone to watch that. It's the 22nd of September. You can get it at www.buesso.de. That's www.buesso.de. Buesso.de. It will be noon Eastern Time, September 22nd, and there will be simultaneous translation into English. Also,
right.
There'll be translation into French and Italian.
So, just on that note, just recently, this past week, a leak was published in the British press exposing records of conversations which were had between the British Prime Minister at that time, Margaret Thatcher, and Mikhail Gorbachev in Moscow before the wall came down in East Germany. And this is something which we've been saying for a long time since the event happened, but this is now confirmation, and this has political significance, that Margaret Thatcher and her allies, George H.W. Bush and François Mitterrand in France, were doing everything in their power possible, including turning Mikhail Gorbachev himself into an ally of the so-called French-British American allies in the West, to try to prevent the reunification of Germany, to try to prop up the East German regime or to do anything that they could to prevent a reunified Germany. And so we're going to draw out the implications of that, why the German nation itself has been under attack ever since Abraham Lincoln and Chancellor Bismarck in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s by the British Empire. What is it about the German culture, which is connected to the American Revolution, did the British Empire want to destroy? And what does this mean now in terms of even understanding what's holding Russia back, for example, from taking up LaRouche's offer of entering into a four powers agreement with the United States, China, and India, and overthrowing this British Empire and a series of other things? So you can watch the website for that.
Good. Thank you. Well, we only have barely 2.5 minutes left, and I understand Nancy and you, Matt, as well, know that LaRouche has been giving preliminaries on a new paper he's working on, and this is to address the kind of thing you've already discussed, the kind of cultural context, or what a minority of people need to cultivate to themselves be able to intervene in this entire mass situation, even though you're in a minority, where you're going to be looking towards, he's using phrases such as reinvigorating a culture of imagination, kind of voluntary creativity. The world's in a real mess, right, in recent decades of being below threshold of just of physical existence, and we need a lot of creativity. Now, that's really open-ended. Do you want to say anything about that, Matt?
Well, one thing that he's also been emphasizing, and this would be the subject of a whole different radio show, I think.
But, soon.
What we have brewing in our basement scientific research team is more product on the subject of a Mars colonization program and an interplanetary economy. Which we foresee bringing into effect at least the beginnings of by the end of our lifetime, about 50 years. And so we've been doing some outreach around that among people who are involved in the aerospace community and otherwise. We have very good responses just coming from a small effort of political leadership and trying to inspire people who genuinely are interested in pushing humanity in that direction. So
I guess these are the very last seconds, and what you say is you're reinvigorating some of the old guard who could be alive and kicking, and the new upcoming in this endeavor, right?
Right.
And this is a conference of space experts, and all kinds of related thinkers and visionaries. Right. So I have to leave it at that and thank you all for participating September 19th, 2009 on the LaRue Show. Nancy Spanis, Matt Ogden on the dynamics of the mass strike. And please do tune in again every week from 3 to 4 Eastern Time, September 26th. And be sure on September 22nd to listen to Helga Zepp LaRouche on live television in Germany. It'll be translated in English, www.bueso.de at noon Eastern Time. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much.